Welcome, everyone, to the Andy Social Podcast. My name is Andy Dowling, and before we kick into this week's episode, it's time to do a little bit of thanking. It's time to say thank you for people that are new to the podcast. Each and every week, I do a shout-out for somebody that supports me, supports one of the podcasts, whether it be Andy Social or Self-Starter. It could be the band Lord, and it could be in a whole range of different ways. It could be really simple things like a bit of social media love. It could be a message of encouragement. It could be buying some merchandise via the andysocial.net website or the lord.net.au website. It could be leaving a review somewhere on the internet. All these things, like whether it be small or big, it really does not matter. It all helps and it keeps me fueled and keeps giving me little sparks of encouragement along the way. So I really appreciate all the help that that you guys give and the feedback, and it just means a hell of a lot. So this week's shout out is for Deborah Harley, and Deborah is from Broadmeadows in Victoria, which I don't think I've ever been to Broadmeadows, but I'm pretty sure it's a suburb of Melbourne. I probably should have looked that up before I started recording this intro. But Deborah flicked me through a message via the Andy Social Facebook page, which you could just search for my name or the Andy Social Podcast on Facebook. You'd be able to find it. And Deborah just sent me this long-winded message, which was really, really cool, but gave me about 15 guest recommendations, just interesting people, and not even like self-indulgent or anything. And that's fine. Like, you can totally prop yourself up if you believe that, you know, there could be some value in being on the podcast. But Deborah gave me 15 like really out there and really interesting people, and people that I'd never even heard of or just never even thought of having on the podcast. And it was just so cool. It's clicked something in my mind because I've started thinking from a different perspective. And I think there's a few contenders here for upcoming episodes of the Andy Social Podcast. So thank you so much, Deborah, because sometimes you need a bit of outside feedback and a bit of outside perspective to be able to, I don't know, continue to evolve and grow and get better at what I do. And when I get great feedback like this and suggestions, it means a hell of a lot. It probably pushes me forward leaps and bounds. So really, really appreciate it. Please shoot me a message when you hear this. I will get a bunch of things together and send them out to you in the post as a little gift pack, a little thank you. Won't tell you what they are because I don't know what they're going to be at the moment, but I have got a bunch of stuff, and hopefully you'll enjoy it because, you know, we all love getting something in the mail. So thank you so much, Deborah, and thank you as always to everybody that continues to support everything that I'm involved with. It's so cool. So cheers. Guess what, folks? I play bass in the Australian metal band Lord. If you love a bit of old school heavy metal, you can go to lord.net.au. You can click on all of the great links and resources there. We've got streaming music. We've got our video clips, our whole back catalog. We've got all this historical information about the band. We've got our merchandise. There's just so many great things on this website, and I've been harping on about it for weeks and months, but it is one of the best band websites out there. I am going to gloat about it. I didn't make the website, so I think even though it is the band that I play in, I think I'm allowed to talk up this website probably more so than Tim, who created it. But it is one of the best band websites out there. If you know a better band website, then tell me, because this one is shit hot. So go and check it out, lord.net.au. Go and have a look, and it's a great way to get a taste of what we're all about if you haven't heard us before. In addition to playing in a heavy metal band, I also host the Self-Starter Podcast, which is all about small business, self-employment, and freelancing. So if you want to earn a little bit of pocket money on the side, or you want to escape the cubicle or your shit job, or you're just starting your new business, or you've got a business, you're a small business owner, go and check out selfstarter.com.au. I've got a fortnightly podcast that goes out. I've got a blog. There's lots of resources. I think if any of those things tick a box or you've got a little bit of interest from any of that, please go and check it out. Or if you know somebody that might fit one of those little categories, then pass the podcast on to them. And please search for the podcast in your podcast player right now. If it's not there, tell me. I'm trying to get it everywhere. But thank you so much for the support for both Lord and Self-Starter. Lord.net.au, selfstarter.com.au. Thank you very much. This week's episode is with Brian Giffen. I reckon a few of you guys might know Brian, but Brian has been around the block for quite a few years. He is a writer, a critic. He's been in the past a promoter, a band manager. He is a music enthusiast, especially when it comes to Australian metal in particular. And Brian is the man behind the Encyclopedia of Australian Heavy Metal. It was first released in, I think, 2002, and the last version of it came out in 2015. And I've got a copy in front of me of the 2015 version, and it's this beautiful hardcover book that's got about 300 pages, and it is amazing. For any of you guys that that love statistics, you're a little bit of a data freak like myself, you'll love this book. It's a great reference guide, especially for some of you collectors out there that collect Australian metal releases, CDs, you know, demos, EPs, singles, etc., albums. This is a really cool reference guide where you can more or less, I mean, you can deface it if you want to. I'm too scared to draw all over it, but it's a great reference guide that you can check to see what releases are out there and what you potentially need to track down still. There's been a lot of hours and a lot of work that's gone into this. It's incredible. And I'll put some links in the show notes that you can check out as well. But yeah, Brian's a writer. He's most known for his writing through Loud Mag. And he's also done a bunch of writing over the years for a whole range of different publications. He's got his own radio show, The Annex, that happens every Wednesday night, I believe, at 10 p.m. It's a community radio station based out of the Blue Mountains, but you can listen to it online as well, I believe. So I'll put links in the show notes over at andysocial.net, including a link if you're interested in buying the Encyclopedia of Australian Heavy Metal. It's a really cool book. I might even take a photo and put it online so you can check it out. It's a really cool chat. We just talked about the encyclopedia itself and how it all came to be, some of the challenges around it and collating all the information. And we spent a lot of time talking about his writing and his approach to writing and his observations out there in the public domain with how people receive feedback and interpret information and how they respond, but also other writers out there and some of his observations. So I know there's a couple of you guys that listen to the podcast that are writers, that you do work for webzines, for different publications, some physical print publications as well. And I know there's some of you out there that are aspiring to do it as well. So this potentially could be a really cool episode to listen to. And Brian doesn't beat around the bush. He's a very honest guy, and that comes out in his writing. There's so many examples over the years where he hasn't held back whatsoever. And he's very entertaining in the way that he writes as well. It's certainly made me laugh, and he's just got a great style in the way that he articulates his thoughts. So, as always, everything will be in the show notes over at andysocial.net. I'll stop crapping on. Please enjoy this really, really cool episode with Brian Giffen. What's been happening in your neck of the woods? I try to stalk people as much as I can, but you tend to lose track of people if you don't see them for a while.
Yes, well, you know, I'm pretty settled. I'm pretty settled up here now. The wife and I just celebrated our fourth wedding anniversary, fifth wedding anniversary, actually.
Oh, congrats.
Our fifth wedding anniversary. We're doing very well. So not the most exciting. I mean, we're not skydiving and we're not astronauts and stuff like that, but you know, we're keeping it together. We're keeping it real.
Good stuff. Keeping it consistent.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, just working at things as always.
Good stuff. I've got heaps of dumb questions to ask you because, yeah, we've bumped into each other countless times over the years, and I think you've been such a heavy influence in a lot of Australian music, especially metal, for quite a few years. But I think I've just taken stuff for granted, like most people that I get on the podcast that I've known for a while. And I tend to assume that I know a lot about that person. Then when you start talking to them, you go, actually, I know bugger all. Like, I know nothing. I won't do a This Is Your Life. So we won't go, tell me about, what was your earliest childhood memory? But I want to, I think some of the things I want to touch on is, I think a lot of your writing that you have done in the past.
Sure.
And a lot of stuff that you've done, I guess, documenting the Australian metal scene along the way. And, just some of the things that you continuously do even now, just with, sort of your writing online, the radio show as well, which is just this consistent thing. So I'm going to pick your brain about that. So we'll go all over the shop. And for me, I've got a little bit of, ADHD, so I can't stick to one thing and just stay with it. So whenever I have a thought, I'll go off on another tangent. So we'll see where we go with it all. But probably a really good place to start, just to try and we'll find a base. The Encyclopedia of Australian Heavy Metal, and
yep, sure.
That's from my understanding, from what I can recall, and I've got the hardcover book, the last edition that came out in front of me here, and no shit, I do not, like, I did not do this deliberately. I opened it up and just happened to open up on the letter L.
Yeah, right.
And I saw my name there, so I was pretty chuffed. But where did I mean, I know that you've been a part of the scene for quite a few years, but where did the idea come about of going, you know what, I need to try and document this in one way or the other?
Okay, so I got the initial idea about it probably when I was still in high school, when I was just discovering that Australia had metal bands, and I was quite enamored of Rock Encyclopedias for some reason. I found out a lot about bands and discovered a whole bunch of new ones from several books that I read that were documenting, you know, rock and stuff. So, well, it just came from there. And then when the whole thing about doing Australian bands was because no one else was really doing it. You know, people like Ian McFarlane had touched on some of the bands, and you know, even in his more recent update of his Australian Encyclopedia, he's got some stuff in there. But no one had sort of taken the bull by the horns and gone, well, you know what, we've got this scene. No one, you know, outside the metal scene, apart from the last couple of years, no one's really taken that much notice of what's been going on there. So I just thought that that it needed to be done. And that was where it came from, really. The idea started out very simply. It was just the fact that no one else had done it.
And was it something, I mean, as you said, you first sort of had a little bit of a spark of an idea when you were a teenager, but then,
yeah,
you know, I mean, it's quite a few years in between. And was it a case
yeah,
that
yeah, yeah, yeah.
Did you actively start to compile things in over the years as you started meeting different bands and learning about different genres of the scene and different little groups and niches and just started building something? Did you have like a million bloody notebooks lying around of different categories?
Not so much notebooks. I had a lot of stuff that I'd started to put together on PC back in the early 90s. A lot of it wasn't at that time very well researched. I had a lot of band names and stuff to look at, and I knew a little bit about things. So I just went from a selection from back in the day of floppies and then hard drives and things like that. It wasn't notebooks. A lot of it came from just my knowledge of what was going on. I didn't write a lot of stuff down. A lot of it was in my head. So if I was to go back and try and find where some of this information came from, I wouldn't be able to actually show anyone. It wouldn't be very good for a Wikipedia article because I haven't got, it's all original research, most of it anyway. So it was just stuff that I'd collected from meeting bands and writing about them and being interested, you know, like being one of those people that at least once upon a time, I don't get the time to do it so much anymore now, but, you know, like totally devours liner notes and, you know, notices the same names coming up all the time and going and finding out what those names are and who they are and what role they have, and then finding out from there going into other places. And, you know, and the magazines were starting to come through then. You know, we had a couple of magazines that were covering that sort of thing. There was zines out there as well. And I just got as many of them as I could and I kept them. And it all just built from there. It wasn't so much a database that was a physical database. It was more like one that was inside my head. So it had to get put down at some point in some way eventually. And that's how it happened.
It's, I mean, when I look through, you know, the book, and I've looked, cause you've got an online guide there as well. That's, I've digged into so many times and had a look for things and trying to work out, especially when I'm doing a bit of networking. Like, it's amazing, especially, you know, we've for our band specifically, we've always sort of been a real DIY band. We've taken a lot of pride in that. And so, you know, we would start digging into the who's who of particular bands and who, like, who are the little circles of friends that all sort of help each other out. And so you try and infiltrate that little group, that little niche of people that might be in Melbourne or Adelaide or whatever. And so you start to look online to see what's there. And one of them was the guy that you had online. And having a look at the book as well, the way that you structured it, and I'm a stat freak. I love stats. I love information, and I love the way that you've done it, because you can see the band members that have been in the band. You can see the time, like the years that they've been in there. You can see the releases. There's a bit of a blurb to give you an understanding of who they are, and there's so much data in there. And you know, when you're, are you a bit of a data freak? I mean, you have to be with this kind of stuff.
Yeah. I think that I do have that sort of, I do have an interest in that, and it has to be, I think that's, it's easy to go through it. You know, when I enjoy those sorts of books, as I said, the best sort of research tools that I like are ones that are very detailed about, who was doing what at a particular time in, I'm not just talking about a band's history, you know, but if it could go through, you know, like for a sports team, for example, you know, stats are very, very important to the histories of sports teams. And there's always, you know, there was actually a book many years ago that listed every single, I think it was rugby league player that had ever touched a ball in first grade. And it listed every point they'd scored, every try they'd scored, every team they'd played for. A vast amount of knowledge was all collected very, and you could sort of pick it up and look straight away and go, yes, this guy did this. And so I thought, you know, it's if you're using these sorts of books, that's how you want them set out. You don't want to have to look for the information. It's like the way the Guinness Book used to be once, before it just became just before it became a tabloid, where you could just look up and see a record, you know. That's what I wanted to do. If you wanted to find someone's name in that book, then, you know, you could find maybe one band that they were in and you'd see their name there. Along with, you know, 10,000 other people in the case of, you know, some bands. I did want to have an index. Yep. I wanted to have an index, but it proved too difficult to do that. And it would have taken up half the book because there's so many names in there. So I ditched that idea. Because that's, you know, very, 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 you know, obviously it's already 300 pages. It would have added another couple of hundred to it. So, and plus, I didn't really have the software at hand to actually put that together. So, but to answer your question, yeah, I'm into that.
Yeah,
long-winded way. No, I think that if you're gonna, it's easy. If you're a research freak like I am, you know, you have to have those details there at your fingertips. So that's the way it just naturally came to me to set it out like that.
It flows really good because you can and. You know, I have the book on a shelf here in my office. And so, you know, from a physical point of view, I'll flip the pages open and start flicking through bands, especially when, like, even for this podcast, like someone throws me a band name and says, oh, you should get Old Mate from this band. I go, I never even heard of this band. And so then I pull your book off the shelf and have a look. And sure enough, this band's a real band and they haven't been around for bloody 25 years. But you think, then you start reading, go, okay, interesting. They existed. But then I go online and I have a look, and apart from what you have put online, there's nothing. You know, unless this band's had a resurgence and they've decided to reform and they've created a really shonky, half-assed Facebook page, there's nothing online because, you know, I mean, how much was documented, you know, in the early 90s or the 80s if the band never really sort of made any headway? You know, there's hardly any video footage, there's hardly anything going there. So even for you, I mean, no doubt you would have had challenges trying to piece all of this together to try and find all these stories and trying to find names of band members, especially if people only released demos and things like that.
Well, it did. In fact, there were some bands I actually had to leave out because I just couldn't find enough information to make it worthwhile. Bands that were, you know, touring when I was at school that I, you know, playing shows that I never got to see because I was either too young. They didn't leave behind anything other than maybe a track here or there. And unless you actually knew those people, you wouldn't be able to tell you very much. And so, there was nobody was writing about any of these bands at all. Like there wasn't a dedicated magazine for that. And that's not just metal either. It was like anything that was underground. There was no dedicated magazines. The pub rock scene was really vibrant in the 80s, but unless you were actually, I guess, what you would call a pub rock band, or one that had a couple of hits, no one was really writing about the bands. In fact, even a lot of the bands that were playing live all the time, like 5 gigs a week, et cetera, if they didn't have a single that got released on the radio or made the top 40, there was no, you really couldn't find out that much about them. You might hear their names, but you don't really hear anything else, and even hear their music really, unless you actually went to see them play live. And so, yeah, a lot of these bands just disappeared completely to the point where I couldn't even find out anything about them. So I was lucky that I had a few people who got in touch from that era and gave me, talked about the bands that they were in and even helped out with some of the other bands that they knew about. But apart from that word of mouth thing, yeah, there's nothing there. There's just nothing.
It's, I mean, I think that's, as you said before, it's not just metal, it's just, it's like, if we're talking about music, it's any genre, and it's just the limitations of that particular time, and how hard and how expensive it was to, I guess, cut through whatever noise was around at that time. And now we've got a different type of noise. I mean, everybody's got an opportunity to have their soapbox and get their stuff out there, which is fantastic in some ways and really painful in other ways. But it's interesting to sort of look back, and even for me, like sort of looking through the stuff that you've been able to compile, and I used to always think that I thought I was pretty shit hot. I thought I knew quite a bit of the Australian metal scene, and even some of the bands that were no longer around. And there's so much. There are so many bands and stuff, and bands that actually physically release stuff as well. And I'm consistently talking to people that find, old copies of EPs and demo releases, or just, full length albums that, apart from their inner circle of probably like about 100 people that went to a few live gigs, no one ever saw them. And so they're sitting on shelves, sitting in boxes, probably dumped in landfill now, and no
Oh,
one,
some of them might be, yeah.
and no one knows about them. And so I just think, yeah, I mean, there's so much stuff there, and I mean, the fact that you've been able to document a lot of these bands is great, but you kind of hope that some of these songs and these releases will be, I don't know, digitized in a way that people can access them.
Well, I hope so too. I mean, recently, I've been talking to Chad from Invocation, death metal band from Brisbane. He just got back a whole bunch of stuff that his band found a whole bunch of stuff, and so he's been going through digitizing all that, because a lot of it was never released. I think they only actually officially released a split EP. That was it. That's the only thing they've released officially. So a lot of this stuff was just demos and live recordings. He's going through all that now and getting it digitized. There's a lot of other bands that are doing that. I mean, I went through. I got a box that's like a 40-liter, plastic tub that's got demos in it that I was collecting in the 90s. And I was going through that, finding bands that I'd forgotten about. And these were bands that I'd gone to see, and I'd just completely forgotten that existed. So they're probably, they might, and some of them I found after I'd done the book, and I went, oh, well, I've left them out. So, yeah, there's going to be stuff that always gets left out, unfortunately. But I tried to make sure that I got in there as many as I did. You were mentioning also the online thing. I haven't actually updated that for quite some time because the wiki's broken. So, so I haven't actually been able to do it, and I'm really too busy with other things to do it now. So I guess it's more like a it's more like a
time
memorial, I
capsule, or
suppose.
or time capsule up to a certain point. I mean, even the book, I think this edition of the book came out, what, 2015, I think.
That's right, yeah. I was planning on keeping it updated, but it's even if I just added the band, not without updating it any further than adding the new bands that have come along since then, in the last, what, 3 years since I did that, or 4 years, 4 years since I closed off the entries. There'd be another, probably another couple of, probably about another 30 pages, of stuff that I'd have to chase up. if you look, for example, at the trajectory, I know I'm using this as an example because, you know, they're currently probably one of the biggest, well, they're probably the biggest metal band that's out there from Australia at the moment. If you look at like Parkway Drive, just the amount of stuff that they've done since that last book, since the last edition, that would probably be another whole page of stuff that I would have to add to just their entry. And that's just one band, you know. They're, you know, at the stage where they're getting listed, like on Hellfest or something, where they were playing on a stage like immediately before or after Iron Maiden.
I saw a bit of that live feed and I just, I couldn't fathom what I was watching. I just thought, is this the same band that, you know, was playing Youth Centers? It's just incredible.
Yeah, dude, that's right. It's amazing. And, you know, most bands start out like that.
Yeah.
And the fact that, you know, they've developed and adapted their sound to just get bigger and bigger. And, yeah, definitely. I mean, if I was going to put together a book tomorrow of the 100, you know, most important Australian bands, I think out of the last 4 or 5 years, they would probably be the one band that would be included out of the whole rock bands, I mean.
Yeah.
Out of anything that's come out of the last 5 years. They're just huge, man. They're just massive. And whether you like them or not, they are doing amazing things for Australian music. So, you know, it's just incredible.
They are, I mean, they're an example of a band that I think just, I mean, I've taken quite a liking to them because, I mean, especially in their last couple of albums, I mean, they've dramatically changed their sound and they're far more accessible to a wider range of people, which I think, you know, I've heard a couple of interviews with the guys and they're saying, oh, well, that's just a natural progression, the stuff that we're into. And that might be the case, but it just seems so calculated, but it sounds really good. And I listened to it and went, oh shit, I could really appreciate this and get into it. And the old stuff, not that it was bad, it was just not a genre of music that I listened to, but these guys, I mean, you know, for us in our band, we always, as I said before, we've taken pride and we've publicly stated how DIY we are. And these guys are still DIY. I mean, their guitarist, I think it's Luke, is still, he's the band manager. Everything's in-house. Yeah. They're so self-sufficient and they're touring these massive rooms and they've got a bloody Tommy Lee drum kit and pyros and everything going off. And they're playing, you know, around the same time as Maiden at these massive festivals. And it's just like, you know, that's, You can't ignore that, and you have to give credit where it's due. And those guys have worked their asses off for so many years, and they're on
an indie label, man. You know, like they're not even on a big label. They're like the label manager works out of an office on King Street or something.
Yeah, that's right, in Newtown.
The same office he's had for 20 years that he's run, and he's like they're just a small label with a huge band that's doing and it's. I think it's a testament to what can be achieved if you have that self-belief because everybody dissed on this band, you know, really, unless you were a fan, you hated them. And I always liked them, you know, I saw them at Metal for the Brain many, many years ago. And they were on like in the middle of the afternoon, straight after some new version of Damage that had been put together. Walk the Earth, actually. They were on just after them, I think. And so, and like nobody was into them at all. But I was just watching this band just rip up the stage. Like these, they were only like, what, 19 or 20 then when they were doing that. That was so long ago, man. And then, you know, and like a couple of years later, they were like 4 years later, they were playing at Download or something stupid like that. That's just incredible.
And,
you know,
I found them from someone gave me a copy of their DVD, and I might remember when I was living in a share house with a few mates, and someone had the DVD, and they're like, "Oh man, you got to check out this band; they're sick." And one of my housemates was, you know, a real big sort of hardcore and metalcore fan, and it wasn't a genre that I just didn't know anything about whatsoever. So I'm like, yeah, whatever. So we're drinking beers and watching it, and I was totally engrossed into this DVD because. it was all about them going to Europe for the first time and just living out of this van and sleeping on the beach in a shipwreck and sleeping on a field. And they would book shows as they were over there, just playing every shithole in Europe that they possibly could. And then they come back and then suddenly they got a couple of contacts. They got on a couple of smaller club shows. The quality of venues were a little bit better, a little bit cleaner. And then before they knew it, they started doing their own headline stuff. And it was just, it was so cool to watch it. And I watched that. I just thought, that's inspiration right there, because that is a band that just, they're 100% in and they're all in, which was so cool, because it was just like, and I think this is even the DVD where it might be their bass player or something, or their bass player left and
the original bass player left.
And they got one of their mates who was like a bit of a road crew guy who didn't even know how to play bass. And they just said, look, just learn it. It'll be easy. And eventually he sort of picked it up and put his heart into it. And he's still the bass player now. And I just think
that is
so, so freaking cool. And yeah, you're right. I think there's a lot of people out there that have really shit on them. And just because of a genre difference. And even now, we've got a bunch of mutual acquaintances, and I won't put anyone's name on the line, but there's a lot of people out there that, that will still badmouth this band and just say bad things without, and they probably haven't even paid attention for the last several years. And I think if a lot of other metal bands even just take a page out of what these guys have done, I think we'd be in a much healthier position. And there's a lot of great things going on, but I think sometimes we've got a little bit of a victim mentality.
Oh, there's always been that, man, and it's always, you know, it's always the tall poppy stuff, you know, like. Oh, yeah. You know, bands that break through, you know, I mean, I know that I think I wrote, you know, speaking about Wikipedia once before, I think I wrote a Wikipedia entry for either Dungeon or Lord at some point.
Yep.
Many years ago, that just kept getting vandalized by someone who had it in for them. And it was just, you know, like petty stuff, you know, and I mean, that was a band that was doing, you know, stuff probably above and beyond what a lot of other bands at your level were doing. And people didn't seem to like that. You know, everyone's suspicious of the bands that seem to get somewhere that isn't their band. So, you know, it's not a thing, you know. I'm not a jealous person. And so when I see that, I just think it's quite petty that someone could go, well, I'm going to take some time and do this stupid thing that you know, I could be using my energy in doing something else, like, you know, making my band better instead of trying to make someone else's worse.
I think I could probably narrow that list down to a handful of people that potentially would.
I'm sure both of us could have, you know, some idea about who could have been involved in that, but, you know, but it's just one of those things that people, I think they need to, I don't know, I mean, we could have an entire chat about just stuff like that. You know, people wanted to cut down others because for all sorts of reasons, and a lot of it is quite petty. And, I'm a reviewer, and I know that people say that sometimes I can be petty, but, you know, I think that if I have, that's the role of acceptor, that's the role that I've taken on, and my role as a reviewer is to let people know what my opinion of something is, good or bad. And if I'm harsh or if I'm, then that, you know, it just comes down to my opinion. And I'm not just someone who woke up yesterday and decided I'm going to be a music reviewer, man. I've been doing this 23 years now. So I'd like to know, I'd like to believe that I know a little bit of what I'm talking about. So, sometimes I might be wrong. Hey, we all get it wrong sometimes, and I'm always willing to accept that, you know. Well, that's another thing that people have to do, you know. If you do make a mistake, if you do something wrong, you know, stand up to it and own it and move on from there.
Well, a big thing that I've noticed over probably more recent years, and maybe it's just me, maybe I'm just not as immersed in it all as I used to be, but I think with the demise of message boards and anonymous posting, And everybody's got a name out there now on social media, and it's very hard to make up a nickname and hide behind it. I think all the shit talking has reduced severely and drastically. Oh. And I think overall it's a lot healthier. I think people are more supportive, and I think people are starting to get that you actually get you get far more out of everything. I mean, you could just say that in life in general, but you know, if you're a musician or you're a punter and you're involved in that scene one way or the other, by just praising people or just keeping your mouth shut if you're not into something, you know, it can be a really positive thing and actually help everybody, including yourself. But I think when message boards were fantastic and they were really going hard and everybody was using them, then it encouraged a lot of bad behavior, because I think people could be a bit of a keyboard warrior, even if you knew who that person was, just because they had a different username. There was a bit of a psychological sort of thing there where people felt a little bit more, I guess, liberated to make some pretty crazy comments. So I've seen that reduce a bit. You still get people out there that don't hesitate whatsoever, but I think people get called out a bit more now than what they used to.
Well, I think the problem with, you know, but people calling stuff out sometimes can make it worse, because I've got a lot of very entitled people who've never been cut down, and you know, they believe that what they're saying is absolutely true, and you know, that's started an entire, almost like an industry of self-important, self-declared experts on things who are now going on YouTube and making elaborate videos about just utterly absurd, stupid shit. Like, you know, there's an entire cult now that believes the earth is flat. And honestly, man, like, if you look at all the things that they believe, it's worse than any religion you could possibly come up with.
Yeah, definitely.
They just come up with things out of thin air to solve the problems with their own theories and don't even think about how stupid it is. And then they have all these people going, oh, yeah, you're right. And then other people call it into question. Now, one of my favorite things is someone who says, people who say, do your own research keep an open mind. They're my two favorite things, man, because first of all, I always do my research. That's what I do. I research stuff. I'm a writer. And so I research things all the time. I'm always researching things. So for them to tell me to do my own research, of course, that's just, you know, stupid. And to keep an open mind, keeping an open mind is accepting the possibility that you could be wrong. It's not automatically disagreeing with everyone who doesn't think the same thing that you think. That's not being open-minded. That's the exact opposite of open-mindedness. I spent a lot of time, or I did, until I got sick of it, arguing with the idiots about stupid shit.
And you are right, because I mean, that's I guess that's been the back part, or the dark side of, I guess, you know, this great thing of connectivity between people globally, where you know, there's this free exchange of ideas and opinions, and opinions probably being the main focal point, where everybody's got an opinion. Whether there's substance behind it, whether there's expertise, or you know, even some reality behind it, it's beside the point. It's an emotionally charged, subjective, an opinion's not even the right word to say, because it's not even an opinion. Yeah. It's just noise that's coming out of somebody's mouth or through the keyboard that's just utter dribble. But people are highlighting their own insecurities, their own fears, you know, all these negative feelings that they're having, and they've got a platform now. You can freely express this out there. Everyone can see it, and you can stand up and walk away from your phone, you probably can't walk away from your phone these days. Everyone's attached to it.
Well, not really.
Including me. But it's, you know, there's a disconnect there where, you know, I think in person, people wouldn't be expressing themselves in the same way. So it's definitely opened up a lot of interesting behaviors.
Oh man, look, I love the internet, and the whole thing about the free exchange of ideas is amazing. This is like, that's the beautiful thing about the internet, right? It's there. You can get any idea that you want, and you can express it in any way you like, and no one can really stop you. And I think that's a beautiful thing. The fact that a lot of these ideas are demented, I think, you know, there's a lot of dangerous ideas, but that's That's totally cool. People have to make up their own minds about the sorts of things that they consume and the sorts of ideas that they accept. But they have to go, like, I think the internet should force you to take that extra step and find out whether what you're watching on YouTube is actually true. A lot of people just swallow it like they swallow other things. You know, for example, somebody will say something to me and I'll know that it's not true because I will type something into Google and within three clicks I'll have found something that completely disproves what that person is talking about. And it's taken me less than a minute to do it. Whether that other person has just gone, oh, this is on the internet, it must be true. And we all need to do that. I think that's what we need to do. The open exchange of ideas is amazing and incredible. But we can't just fall victim to, well, we do because we're humans and we're lazy. We can't just be lazy and go, oh, well, that's a great idea. What's the next video about?
Yeah, and I think the other thing is it's exposing people. So, you know, I think we're all individually a product of our own environment, our upbringing, where we've popped into the world, where we've been born and raised, our parents, our friends, our community, the things, the beliefs that have been, I guess, drilled into us as kids when we were absorbing everything around us, and then those formative years. And so, you know, a lot of us, and I guess it'll be different with the next generation of people that are completely immersed in the digital world pretty much from day dot. But for a lot of us, you know, with the transition onto the internet and exchanging ideas, a lot of it has come from this, you know, this unconscious bias that we've created just due to our own environment. So, you know, you're looking for the confirmation bias on there. You're looking for things, ideas, even if it's a new idea you'd never thought of, you might warm to that because it validates something else that you've had exposure to where there's a degree of comfort. And so you find the answers that you're looking for. And it's really, I mean, that's the hardest thing because I think people don't want to become uncomfortable.
No, they don't. People don't want to be proved wrong. They don't want to be shown wrong. And the thing is that everybody wants to think that they're right, and most of the time they're not. You know, very few people are right all the time, and you know, few of us are, you know, most of us are wrong more than half the time. So people have to wake up to that fact. But it's going back to that confirmation bias thing you said, and we can relate this sort of back to what we were talking about Parkway before. People will, no matter how they might change their style or become more accessible, there will be still people who will hear like one part of their music and go, yep, I knew it was still shit. Because no matter how much they have changed, people will still think that they'll still want to hear that, like, breakdowns and stuff that then, like, that, you know, like 15-year-old metalcore that they're making. And they'll find it no matter what you do because that's what they want to find. Confirmation bias is a massive stumbling block for everybody who's trying to seek the truth. And that's something that you've got to realize that your biases always affect everything you do. You have to be able to look past them and accept the fact that what you're seeing might actually confirm what you're talking about. But that might only do that because you want it to. It's a very difficult thing to get past. Really hard.
It is hard, and especially when you're passionate about something and you feel very strongly for something, and the thought that there might be just a little inkling that you could be just slightly off the mark, you might not be 100% correct, that can be quite painful depending on what you're talking about or what you feel strongly about. And and for some people it's, you know, it's better to be in that state of, you know, ignorance, that, you know, ignorance is bliss feeling, because it's far better and far more comfortable than, you know, exposing yourself to something that might challenge your views, your opinion. And it's really, really difficult. But being on the other side of the fence, you know, one of the really cool things that I've found personally from the internet, and I've found it with a degree of humor, is the way that it exposes people and the way that people express themselves. And it could be, you know, in the form of something very petty, in my opinion. It's petty because I put a lot of emphasis on it, but it's, you know, the way that people use grammar and spelling, and people that I've had a lot of respect for and I thought were actually well articulated. And because suddenly they're, you know, I've never seen them write before, so I just assumed they could string a sentence together. And then suddenly they do that online. You go, oh, wow. But the other thing is, watching when people just consistently shit on things and are consistently pessimistic and consistently, like, you talk about something positive and then someone has found just one little aspect of that that is not quite right. And you just, and I look at it and it used to really sort of eat at me because I just go, like, fuck you. Like, I can't believe, like, what do you want about? But now I look at it. And, one thing for my own development is, like, I think, what is it in your life that makes you tick like that? You know, what fear, what uncomfortable feeling, what experience have you had in your life that makes you lean onto that side? Why do you think that that's bad? Why do you shit on that? And for me, then, it doesn't impact me anymore because I know that it's a problem that they have rather than them trying to put their problem onto somebody else or me absorbing their problem. And I mean, that's a hard thing because I'm not perfect. I still get sucked into stuff and I go, oh fuck you.
Yeah, of course. We all do it, man. Like, you know, yeah. It's, you know, there's, I mean, I posted something I read recently that looks at everything that's wrong with that, going back to the flat earth theory. And I haven't really argued with anyone about it in the past because I don't have the time to do it. You know, I'm not in a position where I can take the time. So, you know, but when I find a good article about anything, I like to share it with people because to me, you know, ignorance is bad. Willful ignorance is far worse when you're presented with the facts and you still choose to ignore them. That's a horrible thing to do because you're not saying that you might have learned something because you're refusing to learn. And that's how can you refuse to learn? It just doesn't make sense to me. I hate that way of thinking.
It's I think it highlights an insecurity that's probably been ingrained, you know, as an earlier child, you know, being called dumb or stupid or being compared with other people that you know, your family members or your school friends or, you know, a teacher that's been just an absolute asshole. You know, it'll be silly. Yeah. It'll be things like that that I guess in hindsight when you're looking at, especially from the outside, you go, well, they're silly little things. But, you know, if you're a kid, those things can be scarring and they can sit there and you might not even know they exist, but that forms a bias that that you hold on to, and people become very, very defensive and very irrational as well.
People have their core beliefs and they don't want them shaken. And even if those core beliefs are inherently foolish, they'd rather have them because that they're theirs. And I kind of accept that in a way, but I don't think it's good that people have foolish beliefs, no matter how desperately they might want to hang on to them. I think that it's good to have beliefs that are backed, that are sound, and it's better to change your beliefs sometimes than it is to hold on to your old ones simply because they're better ideas or it's just more intelligent, maybe, I don't know. Hanging on to things simply because you can, it's like doing something simply because you can, owning something simply because you can, you know, like being a rich person and thinking, oh, I'm just going to spend all my money to fly around the world in a balloon because I can do it. Well, you know, Steve Fawcett found out that, no, sometimes you can't do that.
I know we're going down a rabbit hole here, so I'll try and rein us back in because I reckon I could. I'm getting ramped up. I could keep going with this for ages, but I guess
I know we could, but you know, you probably want to talk about other things, and that's fine too.
Yeah. Well, look, I'm sure that we'll just naturally regress back into that conversation at different times, but I guess it maybe a half decent segue. But you know, talking about criticism and negative comments and reactions and feedback. One thing that I absolutely enjoy is when you write one of those, and I use my quotation marks, one of those reviews on a release and it goes a little bit viral. It gets shared around. Okay. I shared one, I think it's probably a little while ago now. It feels like it's only just been recently. And, and I think you've got you're a writer, you've got a professional edge, you've got expertise, you've got a way with words. And I think that's part of the the excitement around these things. But you know, some of these reviews that you've done where you've felt very passionately about a release and have in I guess as a result marked it quite low. What sort of, I guess, I mean, I'm just trying to, what sort of feedback are you getting from people? What sort of criticism are you getting? And, you know, are you getting direct stuff from the artists themselves? Or is it more of passionate, irrational fans that are just going hard? I mean, what sort of experiences have you had doing some of these types of reviews?
Okay, so I don't really get much feedback directly from people when I do stuff like that. There's been a couple of people who have known what I've written, who know me and have contacted me, and I had a couple of very nasty, very long emails from a particular person once about something that was written that I didn't actually write. It was actually written by someone else, but they chose to use a pseudonym, which I allowed them to do, and the author of the email correspondence thought it was me that was writing. Because my review would have been kind of the same, I think. So I don't actually get that, man. I don't troll Facebook or whatever trying to find reactions to what I've written. If somebody contacts me or posts a link to something, then I'll read it. I usually get quite amused, you know, because you've got to basically not give a shit to what people think about what you've written when you're doing that. I mean, it's just like, I think that artists can be very, I think if you're that, what's the word? Fragile, that you have to react, to what critics say. You know, I think that you should not be an artist. I think it's an artist is there to put yourself out, put your work out in front of people, and not everyone's going to like what you do. Some people are going to really hate it. What I try to be in my reviews is I try to find one thing that I can say was good about something, or I try to present some sort of constructive comment rather than just tearing something down. Even when I called a particular artist, I'm not going to say, but I did mention that I think that music had a new nadir, this particular band, yeah. And that was one of the worst things I'd ever heard in my life. In that case, I don't think there was anything positive that I could find because that music was so bad. And I actually enjoyed writing that review because I opened up a big box of adjectives for awful that I'd never used before. So that was a lot of fun. And I have fun writing good reviews as well. But I don't know, man, the worse something is, the better I enjoy writing about it. But not because I think it's great to, like, tear someone a new asshole for, you know, being terrible. I think that if you put out a piece of art that is ridiculously bad for whatever reason, then you should be told that, just like if you put out something that's absolutely amazing, incredibly good. And I think people need the good and the bad. But I think, again, it comes back to, I'm not going to write a bad review just because I can, because that's just petty. That's really petty. And I think that there's not something that you can't say a good thing about something. What am I trying to say there? Okay. I think there's always something, there's always something a little bit negative that you can write about something. Nothing's going to fulfill your expectations 100%. But if it's just something so small, you don't worry about it. On the other hand, if something is really, really bad, you know, sometimes it might just help to say, you know what, you guys should probably not be a band, or, you know, you probably shouldn't be an artist or an actor or a filmmaker or a writer because you're just so bad at it. I wrote a critique very many years ago now. I don't think it's online anymore, but it was on a blog that I had for a while where, you know, people just because they have this tool, this wonderful tool called the internet, and they have this access to blogging and stuff. They can just suddenly be a writer. And you can suddenly be a photographer because you've got a camera that's got a phone in it. And you can be a musician because, you know, you can pick up a keyboard and a program that you can download and start writing music. And it's not that easy, man. Art is hard.
Think I mean, it's as a musician, and you're part of it, like a release when it gets put out. Although it stings when somebody makes a comment, and even the ones that are like 90% positive, and then they throw one little thing in there, and it still stings. But I mean, I'd much rather a negative review that's constructive and gives some feedback than somebody or just a whole bunch of reviews that just they probably haven't even listened to it. There's just so much bias attached to a band or a reputation or the legacy of something that everything's just amazing and you should check it out. And you sort of go, well, and I mean, I might be talking more on behalf of Tim here, and I'm sure I don't know, Tim might correct me, but you know, if you're spending countless hours slaving away in a studio, smashing, like trying to write an album to begin with, and then going through the painful process, especially for us. And Tim's a bit of a whiz in the studio. I mean, he's doing majority of the stuff himself. You know, for him to put something out there, and then from a critic point of view, to get these half-assed, oh yeah, it's great, you know, sounds like this or whatever. And yeah, and I'm sure part of that's like, oh, that's cool, like that's nice to hear. But you want somebody to sort of really sort of get into the guts of it and say, like, I like how this is happening, I don't like this as much, et cetera, and you sort of just start to dissect it and just give something that's a little bit constructive. And I mean, the bunch of us, when we get together or we've released something, we're reading reviews and we're in our little group chats, and we'll make comments about a review and go, what the hell is that person thinking? That doesn't even make sense. But I'd much rather that, where somebody's, you know, having a bit of a jab, not in a direct way, but just making some sort of, you know, critique about what's going on, than just, you know, just mindless dribble where it's just like, oh, this is great. And it helps us, helps us improve.
And one of my favorite peeves is bad writing on music websites, man. Like, everybody wants a blog now. Everybody wants access to go see their gigs for free. So they, you know, put together a blog and start reviewing stuff. And yeah, well, that's how I started doing it, right? I actually started down, not so much because I wanted to get into shows for free or get music for free, but because I knew that, you know, that was a way to sort of get into writing and stuff too. So, but I was doing it for different reasons. But I knew very soon that very early that I could get into gigs for free by doing that. But I was a good writer. And so I made an effort to write, get better with my writing, and take the time to do the proper research, listen to the music properly, understand it, get to know the artists like yourself, you know, to continue to create. And I've mentioned this before online. I went to the Rock and Roll Writers Festival last year, and Michael Dwyer from Rolling Stone was there, and he said that the job of the music reviewer is to continue the conversation that the artist started.
I like that.
It's one of the most profound quotes that I've ever heard by a music journalist, man, and it's stuck with me ever since. Because if you can't listen to that music and you can't continue that conversation that the artist is having, then you should just put your pen down and go find something else to do with your life. I wrote an atrocious review recently of an album that I quite like by a band that I'm a fan of and I'm friends with, and it was a positive review in as much as they wrote good things about the album. But they fixated so much on one particular part of the band that the rest of the band might as well have not even been there. The music itself was almost not even a factor in this person's review. And I thought, that's just like fanboy gushing. It's terrible writing. And I honestly hate that. If you want to be a writer, you have to write. You have to, like, don't publish everything that you write and think it's good. You know, that's the curse of modern blogging, really, is everybody thinks they can do it, and not everyone can.
Well, it's probably like, I mean, if you look at just social media and just people that post every day about, you know, taking a shit or just doing their shopping or whatever it is, and every element that they have in their life, and it paints a picture of them. You develop a perspective about that person through the way that they communicate. And I would assume, and I guess I could take it from my own personal experience, certain people out there that are music journos or class themselves as music journos and, you know, write on web scenes and just using the example that you said before where, you know, a particular focal point in a write-up about one particular thing but completely disregarding everything else, I think it paints a picture about that person and their personality and what actually drives and motivates them. And a lot of the time it's what's the most polite way of saying this, but I think there's just a lack of substance, or there's no genuine aspect of a true love for the music or for the artist or the release that you're talking about. There's another agenda there. There's something else there that attracts you to this. And it might be the association. It might be a particular topic or social topic that's attributed to this band, or a particular look. And there's a number of different things that, you know, can give a really sort of, I guess, ugly perception of a person. And, you know, most people will get away with it for a long period of time, but I think other people will start to notice, and, you know, those people usually don't have longevity anyway.
No, I mean, you know, there's so many people that were writing things that, you know, are no longer doing it. You know, they'll move on with their lives, or they just one day realize that they're not very good. And that's sad, but, you know, I think everyone should give it a go if they think that they're good enough. But if you're still writing the same thing that you wrote 5 years ago and you're not getting any better at it, then, you know, then it's not worth your while. You're wasting everyone's time. If you look at your writing and you go, well, I wrote this 5 years ago and it's crap. And I look at something I wrote last week, and I look at something that I wrote last week, and compare it, and go, "Wow, that's amazing." Then you've grown as a writer. Mm. You know, I look back at some of the stuff that I wrote many, many years ago, and it's good, but it's not as good as what my writing is now. So I know that my art has developed and gotten better over the years. If I'd looked at a review that I wrote in 1996, and thought that it was better than something I wrote last week, then, you know, I'd have to have a really good, serious look at myself, because I know my writing wasn't very good then. It was, you know, it was still good enough for people to actually publish it in actual magazines, you know, not just on websites. But it wasn't. It's not a passion, the stuff that I'm putting out there now. So, you know, and I know that. And you, like, the same thing. Like, if you listen to the music that you were making in your first band in high school, and it's no better than the music you're making now, if that's an aesthetic that you've developed, like, you know, if you're the Ramones and just want to keep making the same record because that's your art, then that's fine. But if you want to continue to develop as an artist across a catalogue of, you know, 15 years, and you haven't, then, you know, you've just wasted 15 years.
Oh, yeah, I mean, absolutely. I went back and thought, oh shit, have I improved at all since I was in high school as a musician?
Well, it makes you think, and you should think every day, am I doing this? Am I getting better? Am I getting better? Or should I just stop and find something else to do? And if you don't think that, it's like the person who just blindly follows the preacher without thinking about what they might actually be saying. Because if you just blindly follow the preacher and he's like running towards a cliff, and he's telling you that when you get to it, you'll fly, and you don't stop and think, well, hang on, people can't fly, and just jump off, you know, that's the same thing, really. It's like just not thinking enough about what you're doing to maybe make a change or give it up and go do something else.
Well, that's right. I mean, what I guess from your perspective and writing for so many years, and I mean, you use the example of, you know, if you can look back and see some progression, then obviously you're on the right track. And otherwise, you know, you might have to take stock and maybe pivot. But I mean, what things did you do apart from that, like, did you were you more absorbed of, or did you absorb a lot more criticism from people and really take it on board? I mean, what sort of things did you have to do to sort of improve over the years to get better, so that you could see the progression?
I just kept rewriting. I just kept rereading things that I'd written, and compared them with other writers that I admired, that I thought were, that I thought I wanted to aspire to be, and see how my work stacked up against theirs, and got to the point where I believed that it did. Not just believe that I did, where I actually knew that it did, because I was having people tell me, editors, that my writing was good. And when an editor tells you their writing is good, and they see so much of it, man, like when an editor's telling you your writing's good, it's good. So if your mum's telling you your writing's good, that's good. That's good. Like,
It's a
that's,
start.
but when somebody who's seen like 10,000 people come through their office and had to read, shit day in, day out for 20 years, and they go, "Hey, you're a good writer. You know that you're a good writer, and that work that you've done reading fucking, everyone, like all the reviewers that I admired, the writing that I admired, and going, well, that's what I want my writing to be. I want to get it to be as good as that." And when you get there, you go, "Well, good. Now I could be better. I can be better than these guys." So, it's really just rereading your stuff that you read years ago, absorbing on it, looking at the mistakes you made, taking the good parts out of, "Hey, that's actually a pretty good sentence. That's a good phrase. Wow, that was well written." And then going, "What am I reading? What am I writing now? Is it as good? Does it make me laugh? Does it make me think?" And if it doesn't, then you go, "Well, why doesn't it?" You just analyze it completely and just keep analyzing it over and over. And that's how you get better.
Did you ever?
It's like a guitar player, man. Like if Eddie Van Halen put his guitar down and didn't pick it up again for a week and then did that, he'd never have been the guitar player that he got to be. He just
Oh,
played his
that's
guitar
it.
once a week. You've got to play every day. Like that's why I never played guitar, because I just didn't play enough. I would pick up a guitar and go, "Oh, here's a few chords, bash, bash, bash." And then a week later, go, "Bash, I'm not getting any better at this." And so I just put it away because I didn't have the time. So I did start, I started, I almost became a writer instead.
Do you write every day?
I do write every day. Sometimes I only write a sentence. Sometimes I write a page. I'll put things together in my head, which is, really what writing is. It's putting things together in the head and then putting it on the page. And then I put it on the page and I look at it again. It was terrible. And like, I'll start again. But I do write every day. Like you said, you have to. Otherwise you lose it. Like people have writer's block. Oh, I've had it. I've had a fair bit of it. As I was writing for Rolling Stone last year. It was one of my goals. And not long after that, the magazine closed down. That was a massive blow for me, man. Like it wasn't personal. It's not my fault. But to reach that, what I saw as a pinnacle, to have it taken away from me so quickly was, and still remains now, actually quite devastating. And it took a lot. It's taken me most of this year to really get my mojo back writing again and realize that, I've had a few problems with getting motivated again since that happened. It's kind of crushing, actually. And but I know, like I'm doing better than other people. Rod, who was the editor there, he's struggling to get his he's struggling to find work as a writer, man. And he was the editor of the Rolling Stone. And I'm not in that position, because I have other work, I'm not I don't I'm not writing as for a living, like some people do. So I do other work and I've got other things, but it's still really bad. It's real. It, something like that happens. It's really tough. It's like if you were in a band, and everyone turns around one day and says, "Well, sorry, dude, we don't need you in the band anymore." And you're like, it's like Dave Mustaine syndrome. Some people just never get over that. Even what they go on to achieve later, so much. I mean, that good dude has done so much stuff. Like, and he's still, like, it's still, but it's still. it still stings him. Like, he still never got over the fact that he got kicked out of that band so many years ago. Like, most people would have just gotten past it now. And I'm like, that's not at this. I'm not. I hope that I don't end up like that. But yeah, it does. It's when something like that happens, it can affect you, and it has affected me. I've actually had problems with motivation writing this year, but I still do write every day. Yeah.
And I mean, one thing that I've found, and I'll never say that I'm a writer because I've got no idea what I'm doing, but you know, I've forced myself to have to write a lot over the last year or so, yeah, especially with the podcast, because I'd write a little blurb, or I've got my other podcasts that I do where I try to try my best to put a little bit of substance behind it, and it is such a difficult thing because you find that you hit brick walls all the time. You find yourself saying the same type of sentence with the same starting points, the same crap, and you're constantly just hitting yourself over the head going, what am I doing? And I put it off. And it's the procrastination which makes it even worse, because everything becomes far more difficult than it is. And I find that if I sit down and I actually physically, you know, and it might not even be tapping away on a laptop, I might have to just get a pen out and physically write something on a scrap piece of paper, that I find that I break through that. And it might be a case of I'm writing absolute rubbish on the page, but it's there's just something in that, in, I guess, from a psychological point of view, that just breaks you through some of those first barriers. And I mean, I mean, even when you were talking about before, about, you know, going back and looking at what you were doing earlier and seeing if there's an improvement, I don't even know if I've got to a point where there's any difference in what I'm doing yet. I think it's all the same, but it's but I know that through repetition and continuously doing it, that and thinking about it, I think I've got some awareness of some of the silly things that I do. So I think that helps me a little bit. But I have to show up. I have to show up every day and make an attempt of writing some rubbish just to keep it moving.
And everyone has to be their own worst critic, right?
Yeah.
So you've got, you just said you're not at that point. Well, you haven't reached that point yet. One day you're going to look at something, you're going to go, wow, that was awful. Or you're going to go, hey, this is so much, like, you'll write something down and you look at it and you'll go, wow, this is so much better than what I was doing a year ago or 2 years ago or 5 years ago, even with your podcasting, man. Mm. Like, you know, I've been doing my radio show at two different stations. I started doing it in 1994. I started on radio, not that particular show, but I started on community radio 93 or 94. I can't remember. I got my own show in about 95, and I've been doing that ever since. And I'm still no good at it. I still don't believe I'm very good at it, man. I honestly don't. I don't plan very much. I grab the music a couple of hours that I'm going to play. I've got a format that I follow. I grab the music that I'm going to play for that week. You know, I'm still downloading stuff that I want to play on the show, like, half an hour before I walk out the door, because I do so much other stuff. Then I get down to the end, I just wing it the whole time. And sometimes it's really good. I can listen to it and go, because I, you know, record every show. I listen to it, man, I was on fire that night. And the next week I'll be like, I could barely even open my mouth and make a coherent sentence. And I've been doing that now for, you know, half my life, and I'm still not good at it. I'm still not good at it. I'm still not at the point that I want to be at it. But I love doing it, you know.
I guess that's half the battle, isn't it? I mean, for you to be doing it for so freaking long, and for the consistency that's there as well. I mean, everything else is sort of a byproduct. I mean, there's a love of what you do that keeps you going and keeps you progressing forward. And even though, you know, as you said before, we're all our worst critic. You know, you might shit on yourself and say that you're not that good, but then there's probably like 50 million other people out there doing something similar to what you're doing and are probably absolute dog shit in comparison to what you're doing. So there's always always a ladder there with you know, of comparison. But I mean, the other day I had to go back and listen to some of the earlier episodes that I did for this podcast, and I had to just get some information that I didn't record anywhere else, and I thought, oh, I better go and listen to it. And I struggled. It was painful, and I'm listening to myself waffle. I mean, I still do it now. I'm not really that much better, but I think I just lacked a lot of confidence in what I was doing because I had no idea what I was doing.
Yeah.
And so
Yeah,
I'm
yeah,
listening to it
yeah.
just going, oh, jeez, no wonder no one paid attention when I first started doing it. This is woeful. But then
Yeah.
once again, I could see that, well, there's been a difference since then. And even just the way that I feel when I'm recording things is far different than what I was doing before. So, there's some
Yeah.
progress. So I'm, how much I don't know, and I guess that's subjective depending on the person making that critique, but
Yeah.
I think I'm going the right direction.
Well, I think, and I don't listen to your podcast every week. If there's something on there that interests me, I'll listen to it. And I'm not a, I don't listen to a lot of podcasts. I've actually got planned to start doing my own one soon. I'll probably start out the same way. I won't really have much of an idea of what I'm doing. I've got an idea for what I want to do. And it'll be very specific. Like it's not going to be like you and I just talking, shooting the shit. It's going to be a very specific subject that we'll be talking about every week. But how I'm going to do that and structure it, I don't know yet. Because I thought of it ages ago and I still haven't done anything about it. Other than tell people that I want them to come on the show and do it when I get it all up and running. But you do. You have to. Like it all comes down to, man. Like if you can't see an arc in what you're doing that starts down the bottom and goes upwards, then I don't think that I think you could safely say that you're just not getting any better. But you will notice it sometimes. You'll go, wow, that was really good, much better than when I started. And if you do something often enough, and you've got a modicum of talent, then yeah, you will improve.
The other thing that I think, well, I hope so anyway, but I mean, and
Yeah.
I guess it's subjective as well, because you always have somebody out there that will compare you versus somebody else, and that other person might be
Yeah.
10 times better than what you are. But I guess for yourself personally, if you can see just any form of, movement in the right direction, then that's enough. And on top of that, if you're enjoying what you do, then once again, that's half the battle as well. So that's the positive with all that. But I mean, the other thing that, I mean, with your writing and and even just doing the radio show for so many years as well, and something that I've noticed, I guess playing in a band, probably not so much in the band because you're with a collective of people, but the podcasting is a different level altogether because it's me. I'm putting myself out there. I'm putting my name against something, and it comes back into that tall poppy syndrome sort of stuff where you feel like, oh geez, what sort of wanker am I to start a podcast? Who do I think that I am to put my voice out there and start talking to people that probably aren't in the same league as me and have done all these amazing things? But for you, with your writing, with doing the radio show, I mean, did you have to go through any sort of pain points of as far as that vulnerability of putting yourself out there and putting your name against things in the public domain that people can potentially come back at you?
No.
Okay.
No, truly. I didn't go, should I write this? Should I publish it? Was it hard to get behind a microphone? No, it wasn't. It was a because I guess at first when you're on the radio, no one knows what you look like.
Yeah.
So if they see you walking down the street, you could walk straight past them and they're not going to like throw a punch at you because they don't know who you are, or anything like that. No, I never actually had that. Oh, okay. So it's occasionally I've gone, oh, should I write that? Because especially if it's something that I might be reasonably close to, or but you know what I've also found is if I do publish it anyway, usually the person whom I'm writing about, they might get a little bit upset. But I found that they will respect the fact that I, even if I'm not a friend or something fairly close to them, they'll still respect the fact that I was able to say that rather than just, either not saying it at all or, lying. And I think that they might hate me for a little while, but, the next time I see them, that they're okay about it. There's a couple of people who get upset if you don't write absolute 100% positive things all the time. I mean, there's some people who are so, they're so self-delusional that they think that everything they do is wonderful and they can't possibly be, they can't possibly, they're beyond criticism. Like, you and I both know people like that. If we probably both know the same people
I think
actually
so.
that are like that. So, and it's difficult to get through that. It's
Yeah.
like going back to before when we were talking about just, people that come up with stupid beliefs. They're so, they believe in themselves so strongly that they can't accept the fact that someone might actually criticize what they're doing or think that there's something wrong with it. Think that it's not very good, think it's lame, think it could be better. It's like, oh, how do you know? How could it get better? You don't do it. Well, the reason I don't do it is because I can't. But you're supposed to be the one who can do it, and you're not doing it very well. And just because I can't do what you can't, what you can do, doesn't mean I know that you can't do it better. It's the whole thing, like say, well, you're just a critic. How do you know about playing a guitar? Well, I don't know how to play a guitar, but you're the one who's playing the guitar. You should be able to play it better than that. I know what a good guitar player sounds like, and I know what a bad guitar player sounds like. I don't need to be able to play the guitar to know that.
That's right. I
But
mean,
yeah.
so I hear it so often where people like the rebuttal is always, well, I like to see you do better. And it's like, well, I probably can't because, but I'm not the one putting myself out there labeling myself as this. But as an
It's a stupid
appreciator,
argument.
yeah, that's it. But it's such a it's a defense mechanism that kicks in where there's this element of, being irrational about it, and just you can just tell it's such a massive pain point for some people. But I mean, were you always like that? Even before you were writing, were you always sort of, I guess, oh, I'm just trying to think of an appropriate word, but were you confident in your ability to be able to communicate with people when things weren't 100% right? It's like you weren't just a yes person. You, if something wasn't right, you were able to say it with a bit of confidence and not worry or not feel vulnerable or anything as such.
I was, I was, but yeah, it was more. A lot of it was like smarmy, smart-ass comments about things, like, yeah, you think that was good, do you? And stuff like that. And it just turned, and often I'd hear someone snigger because I knew they would agree with me, like, yeah. And other, and the person who heard it might get upset. But you can either hide behind that, oh yeah, that was really good, and pretend that you like something. Or and but the thing is, if people need to, the people need criticism, and there's no point hiding it from them. You see the results on reality TV. Those audition shows where people break down because they've been told they suck, and they do suck, but they've never been told they suck. People need to be told they suck when they suck. It's not my fault. That's one of the things that I used to say once was, "It's not my fault your band sucks.
I love
It's your fault they suck. You're the one who has to fix it. I'm just telling you what
I'm doing you a favor
I
by being like the only honest
think."
person here by just highlighting it. Now do something about it. Do something with that
Exactly.
information. Oh man, I
If
watched
I
a
offer
oh, I was just gonna say,
it,
I've watched a few of those, like, I don't know, like The Voice or X Factor and that rubbish on TV, and they have like the early start of the point of that season where they have all the rejects that come on for entertainment purposes where they're just woeful and they get kicked off and said that they're crap. But I can't, I mean, I laugh at it, it's hilarious, it's entertaining, but you sort of just think, man, like your parents or your friends or the people that have just built you up to this element of delusion. I mean, how fucking harsh is that for somebody to just blindly praise you and probably deep down know that, they actually aren't that good, but because you've got so much love for them and you want to, you don't want to hurt their feelings, and it's just like, oh, good on you for putting the effort in and not giving any constructive feedback whatsoever or exposing them to any form of discomfort along the way so they can grow, but then putting them on a freaking stage on, well, not even national TV, sometimes it's global, and just
That's right.
watching their mental health just completely evaporate.
Exactly.
These
Like
people probably
their
never recover.
entire set. I mean, these people aren't just sad, they're shattered, they're crushed. And my dad, I don't know if this person existed or if it's a true story, but I remember, and this is quite, because I was actually thinking of using this in a review that I was doing at the moment. He once told me a story about this crooner, I believe, whose name was Johnny Eyeliner, apparently, who was so goddamn awful that The only people, like, he was really bad apparently, and he had a group of friends and family who kept building him up, saying, "Come on, Johnny, you're good. Yeah, you're at the." So, you know, the end of the crux of the story was that he ended up booking out a huge room for a concert, and no one turned up.
Oh, jeez.
And no one turned up because he was just so eye-wateringly awful. And he went out and bought himself a gun and blew his own head off because he just had never been crushed like that before. He didn't know how to deal with it. So whether he actually existed or whether it was just my dad, you know, saying this thing to me, that story stuck with me forever because it's like if you don't tell someone that they're no good and they go on continually believing that they are, eventually they're going to hit a wall where they realize that is going to shatter, and they will. They may not kill themselves, but they'll spiral into depression, or they'll become some kind of drug addict, or you know, just horrible things. That and it's the same when you know you get to the point of fame, as high as you can get, you crash down again. You know, like Darryl Braithwaite, when after Sherbet split up, he was unemployed for years. Everybody knew who he was. And this isn't taking anything away from him as a performer or whatever, but after that band split, he had nothing, and he had to deal with that, and he did. You know, obviously he picked himself back up, and he was able to become a massive star once again. But some people would not be able to do that
I mean,
because he'd been knocked down. He was able to get himself back up again, and he had the strength of character to do that. And he also knew that, despite how big a car how star he was. I suddenly went, oh, I'm not a big star anymore. I'm not. He didn't even have a job, apparently. Like he was unemployed for years, so that can happen.
Well, I think, I mean, one thing that, I mean, even us in our band and a lot of friends,
Yeah.
we always say, like, especially if you get a little break, you know, something happens and you get an opportunity to do a great show or, you know, some great opportunity that you just never thought would ever happen. We always say, just milk it while it's there, make the most of it because we know where we came from. We know what was happening beforehand, and eventually it will go back to that one way or the other. And we just have to understand, you know, what I mean. One thing that I always, like a broken record with people, I always, especially when people get overwhelmed about just life in general, everything's just this massive stress, and people get upset and you know, get very cloudy with their vision. And I just say, look, you just got to think about the, like, instead of just worrying about a situation, think about the absolute worst case scenario and just, like, absolutely map it out, spell it out, and think about what you would have to do in that situation. And that worst case scenario more than likely will never happen. But if you've got a game plan, even in that worst case scenario, that you can still function at a bare minimum and eventually pick yourself back up, then you're going to be okay. And suddenly the pressure's taken off. But I think that's a lot of support that people need, and a lot of people are never exposed to others around them that can give them that type of advice, or they're not put in situations of adversity growing up, or you know, they're a little bit too taken care of and coddled along the way. And it's just it, you know, when they get out to the big wide world and suddenly someone tells them that they're a piece of shit or they suck, and it's like, oh, how dare you hurt my feelings. And obviously it goes to more extreme circumstances, as you said, of that example of that performer. And it's just, I mean, it's a scary thing. But I think, you know, to, I guess, circle it around a bit, I mean, that's why critiquing and feedback and information is so important. We need it.
Yeah, we definitely do, and it's a very important thing.
One thing before we wrap it up, because I could waffle for ages, and I was starting, I could feel myself getting worked up a few times here in this convo. But I know we've spoken about it a while back because I was quite curious at the time. But can you just explain to me, with the last book, with the encyclopedia that you put out in 2015, you did it through Lulu. It's a print on demand service, is that
Yes,
right?
it is.
So,
Yes, it is.
yeah. Do you just want to explain it? Because I know there's a bunch of I've spoken to a few friends, and everyone, I mean, look, take this with a grain of salt, and I always do, but I've got a lot of friends that would always love to write a book one day, and or they've got something that they want to put out there in a book-like form. I mean, how's Lulu helped? Because I know that, you know, obviously printing, I mean, I look at this thing, this is a beautiful hardcover book. It's 300-odd pages, massive.
Yeah.
And when I first, and this is why I hit you up in the first place, I said, how the fuck did you manage to do this? And then you showed me that link where it was this print on demand. Yeah. But what's it like?
Well, they're really good. They've been around for, they're one of the first places that started doing it. They send you you basically just send the PDF in the format they tell you to send it in. The gifts and stuff, if you want a hardcover, you've got to send it. It's just like designing an album cover, I guess. And they just print it for you. It doesn't cost you anything. What they do is I know some places do, for everyone you sell, they take a small amount. So like they'll say, your book costs us $6 to make. So the first $6 for every book is ours, and you can charge the rest whatever you want. So you just send them the specs and the text, and they put it together for you. And it usually takes a couple of days. It doesn't take very long at all. So you don't have to do it. As long as you've got it in the correct format and it's laid out properly, it's as easy as that.
Would you get other people involved leading up to that point where people would go back and proofread things, check things over? Would you do all the formatting yourself, or would you get somebody else to help you out and sort of compile?
I did it all myself this time. Because, that sort of thing is, people expect to be paid for that, and it's going to cost, something like that. It's very, very time consuming. It takes an enormous amount of time to do it. So, I did it all myself. But, the cover art was done by Roy Talkington. I sent him the specs that Lulu sent me, and he did it for me so that everything was correct. And all they had to do was get the file and put it straight onto their system and produce it. I know there's other self-publishers out there that have entire staff that help you with it. But if you use them, some of them charge you for that because they have an editor and they have a graphic designer and stuff like that. I was lucky that people offered to do things for me for free. So that took some of the pain away. But it's a good system. It doesn't, that particular one doesn't cost. I know there's other ones out there. I've used them, but I've always go back to Lulu because they've always been good to me.
It's fantastic. I don't know how often this stuff sort of gets spoken about because, you always just talk about it's sort of like the printing of CDs, as you said before, where, it would be like you would have to physically print them yourself and commit to a minimum quantity of that release. And so that involves you paying the cost price of whatever it is. And for, CDs, they're dirt cheap these days to print compared to what they used to be. But, for books, I don't know much. I've never been involved with the printing of a book, but, the word that you always hear out there in the public domain is that, it's very, very expensive to print a book. So when I saw these things, I just went, oh, geez, who's been helping you out? Where have you been stockpiling money? Because this is incredible. But it's fantastic that something like that exists. And as you said, there's a few other different platforms out there, but it just means that people have got an opportunity to make something happen, something that they're passionate about, and put it out there without worrying about being at the mercy of a publishing house or having some sort of agent give you a deal or something like that.
Oh, that's still the best way to do it if you can get it. But these things do exist now, so you can do quite well out of it. And I've sold quite a few copies now over the last 3 years. I keep getting orders, so. If you've got good product, people will buy it, and that's I think that's the key to all of it, really.
Well, can't disagree with that, definitely. Well, I'm going to put a link in the old show notes, so people
Sure.
can order one if they're curious, if they don't have a copy yet. And I'll put a
Sure.
link
Thanks, mate.
to Loudmag and everything else that you've been involved with. You'll have to give me some retro photos from back in the day of yourself. Give me some glamour shots, and I'll chuck them in there from
Yeah, sure, I'll do that.
yeah, but
I'll go see if I can find some. Yeah.
yeah, sounds good,
I've
but.
got one of me. I've got one of me posing with a sword at the Hammer House in Parramatta. It was taken about 95. If I
Oh
can find that, I'll send you
yeah.
that.
Yeah, right. Done. Done. Awesome. I
right.
love it.
No
All right, man. Well, thank you so much. I think
worries, man.
we only scraped the surface. I think I've got a bunch of other things that I wrote down here, but there's always time to catch up down the track. But
Yeah,
yeah, I really
for sure,
appreciate it.
man. Thanks, man. Thanks for thinking of me, and all the best with everything.
Thanks, everyone. If you want to reach out to Brian, you can do so in the easiest way in the world. Go to andysocial.net, click on the show notes. I'm going to have all the links to everything that Brian's involved with. If you want to support him, reach out to him, have a chinwag, read any of his online writings. He's got some really, really awesome stuff. Nice and easy, andysocial.net. As with every episode of the Andy Social Podcast, you can go over there and check it all out. And in fact, you probably can access the show notes via your podcast player at the moment. So if you're listening on Spotify or listening on Apple Podcasts or wherever, and if you scroll up or click again, you'll be able to access the show notes. And I don't know whether you can click on links there, but anyway, you can do that or just go to andysocial.net. Nice and easy. Everything will be dumped over there. But thank you so much, Brian, for being a part of that. It's been a long time since we've caught up. So this podcast does great things with me keeping up appearances. And I look forward to catching up sometime in the near future as well. So really appreciate the time. Before we wrap it up, at the time of this recording, if my scheduling is correct, this weekend, like as in 2 days' time, I will be playing with Lord at Max Watts in Melbourne. We're playing the Metal United Down Under Festival. We're headlining that in Melbourne. You can buy some last-minute tickets via Moshtix or OzTix, or you can go to lord.net.au and grab some tickets. If you've got an opportunity to buy tickets up front before the show, that means a hell of a lot for everybody. It's actually a massive help. It helps guarantee funds, money. It legitimizes metal in this country. It helps the venues. It just helps everybody involved. So if you can do so, it does great things. I don't know how better to articulate that, but you know what I mean. Anyway, otherwise, buy tickets at the door. I'll see you there at Max Watts. And for anybody in Sydney, we are also playing our only other show for 2018. Saturday, November 3rd at the Ballface Stag in Sydney, which is day two of the Steel Assassins Festival. We are headlining day two. Pardon me. And day one is being headlined by Hobbs Angel of Death. And for anybody that's been listening to this podcast for a while, Peter Hobbs has been on the podcast previously, so you can go back and listen to that episode. But you can get tickets for that via Moshtix or lord.net.au or andysocial.net. There's plenty of opportunities to buy tickets. And once again, if you can get tickets in advance, it's less cash that you have to carry on the day. It's less mucking around or money that you have to remember to allocate for buying a ticket at the door. More money that you can allocate for merchandise or beer. You know, I mean, there's lots of advantages even personally for yourself as well. Anyway, enough waffling on. If you want to support this podcast in any particular way you can, whether it be social media love, sharing these episodes around, buying merchandise, anti-social merchandise, Lord merchandise, spreading the self-starter podcast around, suggesting guests for either self-starter or anti-social, all of these things go a long way. So thank you so much for people that continuously support this podcast. And it just means a hell of a lot to me. But that's it. Enough waffling on, folks. Another podcast in the bag. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Until next week, take care, folks. Ta-ta.
Larry. Larry, please.